This episode is brought to you by Mountain Sea Media. I spent half my life near the Pacific Ocean and the other half in the mountains of Central Oregon. These places are full of profound stories and experiences that guide my life, even now as a media creator and a beer professional. This is how Mountain Sea Media was born. I realized how impactful stories are to our lives and business. Stories share good experiences and the warmth of friends. They improve business by sharing these experiences and connecting deeply with our customers. If you'd like to connect better with your customers through copywriting and storytelling, contact me at jeremy@mountainseamedia.com. It's your story. I'll help you tell it.
I'm Jeremy Storton, and this is Good Beer Matters.
What happened was actually having beers. I was having a Guinness, and the bartender was from Argentina, but he spoke very good English. He studied in Eugene. The first time I met him, he actually gave me a spoiled Guinness. Kind of said, like, man, this stuff tastes like crap. And he kind of blurred back to me, he's like, you know, you'll never taste a beer like you will in Oregon. And that's what actually triggered the whole idea of doing the whole adventure and going back, selling the place, buying the brewery, and doing the whole thing.
Spain is often associated with bullfights, flamenco dancing, and red wines like Tempranillo, or whites like Albariño. Spain is also known for having one hand in rich culinary tradition while the other is leading the world with its culinary innovation. In any culture such as this, beer can seem like an afterthought. Yet, Spain has a significant beer scene dominated by large breweries that serve some pretty decent lagers. However, this is not the story I want to tell you. This is merely the backdrop from which our story begins. There is an emerging craft beer movement happening in France, Italy, and England, among others, but especially in Spain. Meet Mauricio Mata, an American from Oregon who opened Stone Castle Brewing and Portland Ale House in Valencia, Spain. He is a part of the craft beer movement by brewing and serving Northwest American-style beers with a distinct Mediterranean influence to both locals and tourists in the coastal city. In this conversation, Mata shares his story of origin and execution as we explore craft beer in Spain. My name is Jeremy. I am a certified Cicerone, BJCP judge, IBD certified brewer, and a beer writer. I believe the art, the science, and the culture of beer has more of a profound effect on us than we realize. I believe there is a world of wisdom found in every glass, and I intend to get to the bottom of it. This is Good Beer Matters. These are the stories of us, of great food and the beer that brings it all together. I hope you enjoy episode 2 of Good Beer Matters with Mauricio Mata from Valencia, Spain.
Hello?
Hello, Mauricio.
Hey, Jeremy, right?
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good. How are you? Maybe I should say buenas tardes.
Yeah. It's all good here.
Awesome. Hey, thank you for taking the time to talk with me about the article in the podcast.
Yeah, no, it's cool. That's awesome.
If you don't mind, you know, I know your time is precious. You've got a restaurant to run and a brewery to brew, but first of all, I heard the story from our mutual friend, Matthew Nolan, about how you got started, but I thought I'd have you share that story with me about how you learned to brew and started brewing and ended up moving to Valencia, Spain.
Yeah. Well, shoot, man, it's been a long time. Yeah, it was way back in the day. I was actually doing a little bit of home brewing there in Oregon. And kind of from there, I went kind of messing around with McMenamins and stuff. They're at the Crystal Ballroom, and then met up with John Meyer from Rogue and just kind of got into it from there, really. And came to Spain on vacation and just loved it here. And trying to think on what I can do to stay here, and the idea just kind of came up to open up a microbrewery here in Spain. and just kind of started from there, really, the whole thing. And since I've already always had connection here in Spain through my grandparents, I visited quite a bit as a kid. And so that actually made it easier coming here also. But
so did you brew professionally in Oregon as well?
I got I started out messing around home brewing, and then I started going to McVinderman's pub and then brewed there for a while. And then from there, I actually came here to Spain. So my professional, I mean, to me, I think I've learned most of it here in Spain. I mean, it's where I really got into it.
Oh, wow.
But I brewed into, you know, I bought a 7-barrel system from Port Townsend brewery there in Washington. And I bought, as he moved up to a 15-barrel, I bought his 7-barrel system. And that's what I put together there in Oregon, and pretty much broke it back down. I did a few test batches, broke it down, and put it all in a container and shipped it here to Spain, to Valencia, and kind of started from there. But then a lot of my, you know, experience was here, because it was pretty much on my own. I just had to get it done.
Oh, wow.
And so it's been an adventure.
Well, there's a couple. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was it. Yeah.
There's a couple stories there, I think, that we'll need to explore. But just for the sake of the timeline, and so you have this container ship, you get to Valencia, and then tell me about the pub and the brewery that you opened.
Yeah, I opened up the brewery where I'm at now. It's on the outskirts of Valencia, and about, you know, 20 minutes on one of the little towns outside. And that's where I unloaded the container and built that place up so I can, you know, it was kind of a temporary brewery, and it's been a 10-year brewery pretty much. And I built that. And then because I knew in the city limits, they didn't let you brew in the city limits at that time. But at that time, there was no breweries when I first applied for it. So it took me actually close to 3 years before they actually, back and forth with paperwork and everything else, before they actually let me open up a brewery. And from there, I opened up the brew pub. I built the brew pub and opened up the brew pub, and then kind of started from there. So when I actually got the bar, because it started out as just a bar to begin with. It was just spirits and beer, and I didn't have my license at the time, and so I was pretty much selling everybody else's beer until I finally approved my license and I started brewing. So the brewery was built but sitting on the sidelines, so I was just kind of doing test batches that I couldn't actually sell. And then from there is where right now I just put up an old historical building in the city limits, but the thing, it's on the port, and they actually, since it's a protected building, it's the rights of an industrial zone is protected also. And that's one of the ways I was able to, in between the lines, get my licensing and approved to move the brewery into that location. And that's actually my project right now. So what I'm doing is doing the finishing touches so I can actually move the brewery into that place. And kind of I'm kind of there now right now is what I'm doing.
So, God, I've got so many question lines I want to follow, but so you mentioned, I want to go back just a minute. You said that you grew up going to Spain, you went there for vacation, decided that life is good here, let's make this work. Tell me a little bit more about that decision about wanting to move to Spain, why you wanted to move and be an expatriate living in Spain. And then secondarily, why you decided, you know, I'm going to open up a brewery in Spain, but we're going to call it open up a pub called Portland Ale House and have it be very Oregon-centric. Tell me about that story.
Yeah, I mean, that part of it was kind of, I think at that point in my life, I mean, I was living in Oregon, actually in Salem. And then from there, it was just kind of, I don't know, it's kind of, I was married for many years there, went through a divorce, and came to Spain to for 3 months, kind of disconnect a little bit.
Okay.
And when I came here, you know, just kind of going out to different places and stuff, the way it actually all happened was actually having beers. I was having a Guinness and at a bar, and the bartender was from Argentina, but he spoke very good English. He studied in Eugene. And talking, you know, the first time I met him, he actually gave me a spoiled Guinness, because there wasn't a bar that would traffic a lot of that type of beer. It was more Spanish beer. So it was 30 liter keg that was listed halfways, and you know, must have sat for I don't know how long. It was just bad when I tasted it, and I told him, man, this stuff tastes like, you know, I just kind of said it, like, man, this stuff tastes like crap. And he kind of blurred back to me, he's like, you know, you'll never taste a beer like you will in Oregon. And that's what actually triggered the whole idea of doing the whole adventure and going back, selling my place, buying the brewery, and doing the whole thing. And just kind of that sparked it. It was just thinking, you know, man, you know, if I don't open up a brewery here, somebody else is going to do it. And it's just kind of that, pretty much.
that you have no idea how inspiring that is to me. I'll fill you in on why that is in a little bit. But, oh, man, that sounds amazing. So then tell me about the... tell me the names of your brewery and your pub.
The brewery's Stonecastle Brewery is the actual name of the brewery. And that's a little bit, you know, as a little kid, when we'd come here as a family, I loved castles. So my father would always take me down the coast to see the different castles here on the Mediterranean. So that was just kind of a memory, the big memory that I had from Spain. And it was kind of, you know, a little bit, my father passed away years ago. I kind of named it a little bit in memory of him is what, because I always remember that. Every time we came to Spain, he always made sure to take me to see castles and everything because, you know, I liked it. And then the Portland Ale House is pretty much because it's where I learned how to brew. And a lot of my friends that are in the brewery world, they're all from the Portland area, Salem area. And it's kind of the inspiration of this, and the style beers that I brew are more the Northwest style beers.
So
that's pretty much where the names came from.
Well, tell me about your beer lineup that you have that go into the pub that come out of the Stonecastle Brewery.
Right. What I have right now on tap, I've cut back since I've been doing the new build so that I only have to brew X amount and fill up my fermenters. And it gives me, because I'm actually doing, I actually built the brew pub and building the brewery. So right now what I have on tap is an amber, a Stonecastle Amber Ale, an IPA, and an orange wheat. And the orange wheat is, I do it with fresh orange peels. My wife's family has orange orchards here in Valencia. So I actually use the orange peels from the orchard. The oranges there, dry them and sun dry them, and then that's what I use in my beer. On that one there. Normally I have a porter, a golden also, and a stout. But right now I've pretty much limited to what mostly sells here at the pub. And it actually gives me more time because I brew up a lot of the same beers, and that gives me a couple weeks at a time to be able to work at the new place pretty much.
So how have the people over there responded to all these American, which is to say Northwest style beers?
Actually, really good. I mean, I get a lot of compliments on the beer. You know, even like the IPA, I'm a fan of IPA. And I went back in the day when I brewed that, you know, it wasn't the big movement of IPA that there is now. And I thought, well, you know, if nobody likes it, then I'll just drink it myself, you know, pretty much. So it was kind of what I did. But then once I put it on tap, it started going, and I specifically have people just coming for the IPA. You know, it was a lot more than I expected. You know, coming from that, you know, here is a lot lighter because of the weather and everything. There are a lot of your lighter lagers and everything else. I didn't expect such a big hit on it, but it actually hit pretty good.
Well, and I want to ask you about that too, just from my travels to Spain. We were there in 2015 with family and to kind of do a little bit of the tourist thing. But my side mission on that trip was to kind of research and explore what was happening with craft beer in Spain. And, you know, for the first week, it was difficult to find. But I finally got a hold of some. And, of course, you go into a Corte Inglés and you can see all the beer aisles and all their wonderment there. But it seemed that Spain is still very much a lager type of country, especially with Mao, San Miguel, and Estrella Galicia and all those things. But it seemed to me that as far as the craft brew world in Spain, it was something akin to America in the early 90s, where it was just starting right. to get going. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that's. I think it's getting there. You know, I went to just this year. I went to the Barcelona's Brewers Festival, and I was pretty impressed. You know, it was the whole Brewers Society from the U.S. was there, helping sponsor it, and kind of. I noticed the big difference that you can really notice that they were there, just because of how organized it was to past events that I've gone to where. You know, they've been just kind of a mess. And this actually was really organized. It had seminars like you would go to the Brewers Convention, you know, in Colorado or Portland or wherever they're having it. And I was, you know, not as many people, but it was impressive. You know, you can see it's really going and people are really into it. So, I mean, I've noticed it and I've been here going 13, 14 years since kind of the whole project, you know, and been a big difference because now there, you know, I mean, there was nobody in Valencia. And I want to say there's like 46, 47 breweries registered now in Valencia. Not saying that they're brew pub, but I mean, some of them can be doing it in their garage, but they're registered as with the ID number, tax ID number, you know. But yeah, it's growing and it's growing. It's wow. growing pretty quick.
Yeah,
it's happening in Italy and France, you know, because I've gone to for like Wireman, you know, their big event, Christmas, and you know, you see all these little breweries that are, you know, you talk to different people and that are popping up. You know, I've met even in Colorado at the Brewers Convention, I met Italian brewers and stuff like that that are small breweries that are starting to take off there also. I think it's just, you know, we're all connected now with the net also.
So sure.
It makes it a lot easier for stuff.
Yeah, I think this would be a wonderful time to to move to Spain and live abroad for some time and just get immersed in the whole world of beer.
Yeah. No, it's at the... At the cusp right now. That's what I'm feeling, you know, because it's kind of I'm noticing it in between other, you know. And I have to, one thing I do have to say, it's very different than brewers back home. Brewers back home, everybody helps each other, you know. Here it's a little more they look at you as competition type of, you know. It's a different culture in that sense.
Oh,
everybody's trying to like hold their little secret or something, you know. But where I've never had that, you know, I'm very open with everything, so I don't care, you know. If somebody needs help, I'm right there. It's not, you know, I don't look at it as a competition. It's better that there's more people getting into it because it's just growth, you know.
Well, that's kind of an ironic twist because, you know, typically American culture tends to be more on the competitive side, and we get a lot of collaborative efforts, or you know, the mindset of the rising tide floats all ships seems to come more from you know, European countries, but you're seeing the exact opposite.
Right. I'm not going to speak for the Italians or the Germans or anything. I'm, you know, for the Spanish, it's a different, you know, I've gotten more, you know, I can call John Myers from Rogue and ask him a question. He's open to tell me. Mm-hmm. You know, or, you know, just different brewers in Oregon that, you know, even to build my own keg washer, I remember picking brains and just calling in. And yeah, you know, come down and, you know, I'll kind of show you how I built my keg washer, you know, and stuff like that. You know, it's kind of, I've always had that type of help. And where here, it's kind of, you know, I've noticed through different breweries, you know, because I'm always like, here they've done, it's like a big level of home brewing where, you know, it's all open vats and everything else. And I've been showing, you know, like some different breweries how to, you know, use closed containers and, you know, pressurize into your kegs and do the whole thing. So it's just more of a sanitary process, you know, but you just kind of, I just noticed a little bit of, it's like a competition thing, you know,
but yeah. Interesting. So
I don't know if because it's a small level and they're just starting out, it could kind of be that also. But.
Well, I want to use this to segue into the culture, the Spanish culture regarding food and beer. One of my observations, and I'd love for you to weigh in on this and whether I'm right or wrong, but it appeared to me when I was there that even though the Spanish craft beer movement was still kind of a fledgling and getting started, like I said, it kind of reminded me of America in the 90s, but because of Spain's wine culture and food culture has so much tradition, and at the same time, especially in the north, has so much innovation, it just seemed that the craft brews that I actually did find came out kind of in step with a higher level of sophistication. And it seemed a lot of the focus was not on, like in the Northwest in America, where it was, I call it the hops arms race, where we just needed to brew the hoppiest beer we could. It seemed these beers were brewed with the intention of pairing with food in mind.
Right. Yeah, that's very true also. Yeah, that is true.
Will you expound on that as much as you can as far as the Spanish beer and food culture?
Yeah, I mean, that there's a lot of that. You know, you've got your different, there is a lot of different styles of beer, and they do kind of pair more with the food. I have a friend that has a brewery, Artura de Vuelo, you know, and their ales are more designed more towards like, they're more Mediterranean, like here, Valencia and food and stuff like that. They're lighter. I mean, but they're touching a little bit more. It's an ale, but it's touching more towards the lager style. You know, they're trying to get it as clean as possible and light as possible. And but yeah, I do notice that, you know, and you're right about how, you know, back home we're a little bit more on like hop, or, you know, more on the wild side on hops and stuff like that. But, you know, even kind of a back on that, that's starting to kind of happen here, that like the whole IPA thing's just gone crazy here also. You know, it's like Barcelona's Brewers Festival was, you know, I was pretty amazed on how many IPAs were out actually on tap there. Even, you know, you had American beers out there where you had the Stone from Germany was there. Lagunitas was there. There's a Rogue was actually there also.
That's awesome.
I was pretty impressed. You know, there was quite a bit of beers from back home there. But it's, you know, it's interesting because even the microbreweries in the States are seeing what's happening in Europe, and they're tapping into it here. You know, I mean, Rogue's been shipping their beer for like 3 years now. You can get Rogue on tap on select areas here, and I know those are actually key kegs at Rogue. I mean, they're brewed there in Newport and shipped out here. But Stone, you know, they made a big step and actually opened up a brewery in Germany.
Which is mind-boggling to me, that American brewery from San Diego is going to open up a brewing facility in Germany. That just seems backwards. Yeah. But it's a testament to what's actually happening in the world of beer.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I was pretty surprised. But yeah, I heard about it a few years back for Mas Marta, where I buy my malt from. So I was at a fair in Germany, and I met up with these guys from from California. They're called Stone Brewing, and they're talking about opening up a brewery here in Germany. And so, oh, really? But that was, you know, it was quite a few years back. But, yeah, but they did it. They were there at the brewery, at the brewer's convention in Barcelona.
Oh, it's just amazing what the, you know, since I immersed myself into the world of beer and got involved in all the ways that I have, it, I keep on thinking I'm going to get to the end of the story and I'm going to think, oh, that's all there is to say about it. But the story keeps on going, and the deeper I get into it, the more is revealed. It's just an incredible thing.
Yeah, it's neat. But it's, you know, like you were saying, you know, it's right now, it's a good time in Europe, you know, for the microbrewing scene. It's really, you know, I don't know the difference between here and Italy, but I think, you know, from my understanding, Spain's the one that's hitting it the hardest on the microbrewing scene.
Well, I first became aware of Spanish beers specifically when someone handed me a beer out of, I actually think it is out of Valencia, called El Boquerón.
Oh yeah.
And then I got my hands on a Valencia Saison and another beer called La Socorrada, and then of course, then I got a hold of a Mateo Bernabe from the north, and so I've been chasing down this Spanish rabbit hole or Spanish beer rabbit hole for a while, and even going there, finding an Estrella Dam, which is kind of like the Bud Light of Spain, the Bud of Spain. But even I think it was our first day there in Barcelona, I got a hold of one of their, albeit macro brews, but a beer called Doble Malto, and it was really fantastic. It was surprising. Can you
Through Estrella Dam, or
It's either the Estrella Dam or the Estrella Galicia.
Yeah, the doble, like the Vol Dam Doble Malta.
Yes.
Yeah, that's Estrella Dam from Barcelona. That's a good beer.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the culture in Spain as far as all the big brewers and the craft brewers? I mean, of course, here in America, it's funny, you know, we have big companies buy small companies all the time in America for car industry, wine, and other things, and it's just one of the things that happens. But when AB InBev buys a small brewery, then everyone screams foul. But there's a lot of controversy there. Can you speak to the large brewery versus small craft brewery in Spain? Is there a story there?
Yeah, you know, I've noticed it, like in the last 2 years, the Spanish big breweries are stepping up, like trying to bring out, it's kind of like what's happened in the States. They're just doing it quicker because I think they have the States to fall back on seeing how big of a market they'll, you know, it's taken in so little time, because they're really pushing now, like they're doing certain beers that are fresher, and, you know, they're brewed and right out of the fermenter, you know, they're at your local bar and stuff like that, trying to do different darker beers and stuff like that, which it's not their tradition, but they're starting to tap into that. Even advertisement, like commercials, you know, like kind of pushing, you know, and it's kind of weird to see it, you know, because there's television commercials, and it's, I think it's a San Miguel or something like that, and they're going out, you know, it's like a scene back in the 1920s, and they're talking, he's on a train, and he's talking about he goes around Europe looking for the best grain and the best hops and stuff like that to make the best beer of Spain, and, you know, so there's a lot of that going on, trying to push the product that's already been settled, you know, for here forever. But it's, you know, I've been noticing that from a lot of the different breweries that have been around forever, is they're now really pushing like the freshness of the product, where they get, you know, how fresh their grain and hops is, and the best quality of hops and grain. And so I notice, you know, a lot of that. But I think, well, yeah, it's kind of, they're noticing also there's a lot of microbreweries popping off, and, you know, you've got the States to fall back on to see how big it's gotten in such a short time period. It's interesting because you start to notice that, where, you know, 6 years ago you didn't see any of that stuff. You know, it's interesting. But yeah, it's starting to happen. I mean, they obviously notice it, you don't know if they notice it that much, but they know what's to come if it's going at this rate.
So do you see this affecting the farms? Are there a lot of farmers that are transitioning over to hops and barley?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that, because in León, I just contacted through someone I met at the Madrid Brewers Festival, that he's German. He opened up a brewery, him and his wife, in Canarias, the island. And he was telling me about that. He was here. He came here, you know, for the Brewers Convention, but then also to visit a hop farmer in Elm that's just started up. They have a small brewery, but they also have the field and the weather. And now they've gotten into growing hops and stuff like that for the microbreweries, to kind of feed microbrews a little bit. And It was pretty interesting. I ordered some hops from them. And the interesting, they only do pellets because it's what it lasts the most for them. But like, he told me, you know, August, September on their picking, if I want the fresh stuff, that, you know, I can drive up to León, and then as it comes off, then I can get the fresh stuff off of them before they even get dried or anything, and then pelletized. But it's interesting because, you know, a business of just that started up because of the demand for hops here in Spain.
Oh, I think it's time for me to head back to Spain.
It's good. And you're going, right?
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah. My wheels are turning like no one's business right now. And that was after that trip. It was that trip in Spain that really put the foot on the gas pedal as far as my interest in beer. I'll spare you the details, but I've wanted to make get into the beer world as a career and everything. It was like one of those things where, you know, if only we could go back to the time that Michael Jackson was writing about beer and traveling through Belgium and Germany and every other country and writing about it and showing the world how wonderful and sophisticated beer can be. You know, if only we could go back in time and you know, basically follow his footsteps and mirror that and kind of get ahead of the curve. But it seems that Spain is offering up that opportunity, an opportunity that you recognized and capitalized on, is that, you know, the craft beer boom is already full of momentum in the U.S., but to go back to Spain, that's, you know, 20 years behind as far as the craft beer is concerned, and just say, yeah, the wave is coming. Let's just sit here and wait for it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I grew up in California. And I didn't get into microbrews until I actually moved to Oregon. And, you know, but my inspiration was actually the taste of the microbrew. You know, when I was here in Spain and it didn't exist, you know, that, you know, in my head was like, man, it's impossible that it can't hit. You know, that, you know, once you recognize the taste of a microbrew, it's hard to go buy your commercial stuff, you know. I was never into beer until I actually moved to Oregon, and a friend took me. I think my first beer was the Terminator from McMinniman. Yeah. You know, that was like beginnings of beer, you know. It was, and still, even in Oregon, it wasn't the massive boom. McMinniman's was already, this was 92. McMinniman's was already pretty much hitting it, you know. Rogue was there, but you didn't have all the little microbreweries you have now throughout Portland, you know. But even back in that day, you know, it was, you know, when I came here to Spain, it was like, man, that's impossible. You know, if you can just get here and get it started, people are going to get into that product, you know. And it was, and obviously at the time that I came, that's, you know, a lot of people were thinking the same thing, obviously, you know, because it's right off of around that time is when everything started just kind of going, you know. And now it's like, I look back, it's like, man, that's crazy that there's so many. You know, I go to the supermarket and there was never a bottle on the shelf, and now there's all kinds of bottles on the shelf, you know, and different microbreweries.
That's the thing that's interesting to me is it's not like Spain didn't have access to incredible beer. I mean, you drive just a couple hours north and cross the border, now you've got an incredible beer to guard. You can get fresh Belgian beers, fresh German beers that are not oxidized from the trip across the Atlantic. Yeah. So the access was there. So craft beer movement coming so late to Spain? Is it just because that they are a stalwart wine country?
I can be totally wrong because I've thought of that a lot, but I just a few years back, people even here in Spain did not travel as much, you know, like to go off to school to the UK, to Germany or whatever. And to me, it's like the generation that right now is really kind of accepting this product and are the ones opening up the microbreweries are kind of the generations that did go away for school, you know, because I remember coming here as a little kid and that was, you know, nobody left, you know, that was kind of, I mean, you didn't find the foreigner in the street here. It's, you know, and now in the last few years, it's, you know, the doors opened up a lot more to where people are traveling. It's a lot more inexpensive to do so. And, you know, and I think it's just, there's a lot more people getting different tastes of the products and stuff and pretty much are the ones that are bringing it back here. Is that's kind of a theory that I've always kind of had. You know, the only reason I based this, I've been here the bar's been open about 10 years now. And, you know, my clientele is kind of that generation, the ones that come this specifically for the beer and stuff like that. It's kind of that generation, or, you know, that's traveled, has lived in the UK and stuff like that, and have been, you know, have had those products there. And that's, I just kind of noticed that mainly off of just the customers that I have, opposed to, you know, I'll have a lager because I'll have the older person that, you know, that's all they'll drink. That's all they know, you know, and it's kind of,
the story of young people traveling to other parts of Europe, or at least in America's case, to Europe, and particularly to the UK, and tasting some of those beers, coming back inspired and trying to brew something better, sounds remarkably like the brewers who got started in the 80s. Is it right? As a similar story?
That's actually real similar. It's even like my friend Pablo, he has his Mas Marta in Barcelona. He imports specifically for Spain for castle malting. And then he sells a lot of home brewing kits and just all kinds of different hops, products, everything has to do with the brewing world. But his whole inspiration of doing this was because he went to go work in the UK, and the job he got was washing kegs inside a brew pub, you know, and he got kickstarted off of that, and then, you know, got into the beer scene, and then came here and kickstarted that here, and, you know, got opened up a brewery and brewing supplies, and, you know, so it's, you know, it's kind of that people that have kind of gone out and they've seen it and they see the opportunity back home, you know, this is a good idea to bring back to where 20 years ago, you know, it was rare that people went out to study out abroad from Spain. You know, it was kind of, and now it's, you know, the doors have been open more, and it's, you know, and it's the most common thing, you know, because now, you know, I remember coming here as a kid and nobody spoke English. You know, now you can find a lot of people, the young generation speaks English, most of them, you know. It's,
well, if I understand, it's just a whole, if I understand correctly, especially 20 years ago, Spain was particularly, maybe even fiercely nationalistic. Is that correct?
Yeah, very, actually.
So I guess that would all, that timeline kind of coincides.
Yeah.
So with, I've got a few foofy questions to ask you. I think of a lot of things in terms of stories, histories and a lot of the stuff that we're talking about. What stories does beer have to tell us, or in your, from your experience, what stories do you have from the world of beer, or Spanish beer and Oregon beer?
No, actually, I don't know. You mean like the difference between the two worlds of Spanish beer and...
Well, like, well, let me give you a good example, because with the work I do now, ironically, I've spent so much time learning about beer, but all of a sudden now I'm thrust in a position where I talk to people about wine most of the day, which is an interesting thing. But what I've observed is when people talk about beer, when people ask about beer, oftentimes they go straight to the numbers. Tell me about the ABV, the IBUs, the OG, the FG. But when people talk about wine, they talk about the terroir, they talk about the family estate, they talk about the food pairings and the soil types and the story of the grapes and how they go trace all the way back to the Spanish garnachas of the, you know, of the you know, northern regions or something like that. Does beer have those same stories?
Yeah, no, like talking to brewers here and like brewers that I know here, you know, they don't talk about it like a history. Like, I'm sure if you got into the family of talking the family amount, it would be something totally different. But between the small brewers that have come up here, it's not, you know, obviously everything's very new. I know between like the brewers here, the American microbrewing scene to them, it's a lot more important than like the European, for like, let's say German and stuff like that. They look more as like to follow the steps of the American microbrewing, which, you know, it's a lot stronger than the European. But I know there's like a lot, you know, how would you say it? Like, they look, you know, like up, you know, they admire the American microbrewing scene, you know, and how far it's gotten in, and actually the quality of the beer, you know.
But is that an assessment of success or technical development, or are we losing the potential for beer to tell a good story?
No, I mean, I think you mean like in the quality of the beer that's being brewed, or...
Well, just the way that people talk about beer, and you know, of course, the reference is how people talk about wine is vastly different from how people talk about beer.
Right. Yeah, no, you know, I think like a few years back, I don't think it was, you know, like even when I first started, it wasn't as recognized. You know, people didn't look at it as like a high quality like they do towards wine. But now it's been accepted a lot. I mean, I noticed that in, you know, just going to the conventions and stuff like that, you know, people are like, you know, I don't know, they talk much higher about beer than they would have, you know, a few years back.
There's a lot more people sticking out their pinkies when they drink.
Yeah, like if they're drinking an expensive bottle of wine type of thingy.
Yep.
Yeah, that's very true.
Which I know, I'm a little torn on that too. I don't want beer to become a thing of snobbery. I think it should be a thing of sophistication, and there's a difference between sophistication and snobbery.
Right. Yeah. Well, but. So, oh, you know, and they've come a long ways, I have to say, you know, because a few years back, just the beer that was out there, I was a little scared, you know, because it was not a product that should have been at a supermarket, you know. And that's, I mean, maybe I'm judging it because I'm used to the Northwest and what gets put out there. But I have to say, like, you know, from then to now, it's evolved a lot. I mean, people are, you know, getting more professional at it, and, you know, because it was kind of a level of just kind of a home brewing, you know. It was, it was in, you know, there was products being pushed out that were actually, you can, they were infected and everything else. It was, you know, and people, I think, are up, are getting on top of that now, you know. And I think, you know, a lot of it, you know, people might have been a little bit at the edge where I need to sell it, you know, and not making the decision if you know it's bad is you need to dump it, you know, and not put that on your name and try to get that out there.
But, I remember going to a brewery in Southern California some years ago, and you walk in and one of the breweries on the beach, and I won't say which one, of course, but you walk in and they show all these medals that they've won at these competitions, and you know, a lot of breweries are very proud about that. It's a sign of achievement and everything. And I walk up to the bar and talk to the gal behind the bar and say, you know, let me try the IPA. She gives it to me, and it was chock full of cooked asparagus. Asparagus and Brussels sprouts. That was the dominant flavor, which was clearly infected, clearly a problem. It was the first beer in my life that I've ever sent back, and so I got the pale instead, which had a much lesser content of Brussels sprouts and cooked asparagus, it was so depressing. I was just like, oh, I'm not in Oregon anymore.
And that's exactly what was kind of happening here at the beginning, you know, is people were pushing stuff out, you know, and I used to think, well, you know, it's a little bit maybe, you know, they're starting it and they really don't know what flavor they're looking for, you know, that's what I think. It's like, you know, because for other reasons, I don't know what else you'd put it out, you know, and I think my luck is that I've already been around it, you know, I know what to taste for and stuff. I mean, obviously, you know, good beer from bad beer, period, you know, it doesn't have to. But
you don't have to know why, but most people can taste good from bad.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's gone a long ways. I have to say it's gone a long ways, and there's, you know, microbreweries popping up, and they know what to do, which is, to me, it's a good thing, you know, is to put a good product out there, because it only helps everybody else that's doing it, you know. Then obviously you put something bad and you sell it, and it's somebody's first time, and say, man, I don't want all this artisan crap, you know, and never want to taste them again.
That's that rising tide that I was talking about earlier. I think that's something that people just forget about.
Right.
So a few more questions left for you, Mauricio. What is your favorite place to have a drink?
My favorite place to have a drink?
Yes, see.
I don't want to say my bar, but
no, you can certainly can, but that's like saying, yeah, you know, what's the greatest moment in your life? And you say, when I got married, when I had kids. So let's take that off the table. Where's your favorite place to have a drink other than your bar, of course?
Is walk over here and hang out with a few buddies and have a couple beers is probably, you know, I don't go out much anymore either. So, but I enjoy a beer. And the whole reason I came here was to make beer that I like to drink. So, you know, now, you know, who, they have a nice IPA is Blue Moon just opened up here in town center.
I'm sorry, who did?
Blue Moon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They just opened up a place, right downtown the plaza of City Hall. And I think they opened up a couple of months ago or something like that. Actually, I went over there with a friend of mine the other day and had their IPA and actually enjoyed it. But so it was nice to be somewhere outside of my bar and having an IPA that I was enjoying. But and the, supposedly the story was came out in the paper, they were actually going to open up an actual brewery on the port, kind of in the area where I'm building right now. But I guess. I don't know if they just did this as a satellite to see if it takes off and they invest in the brewery, but and their whole marketing was because they use Valencia and orange peels for their wheat beer, but we'll see, because I think they got bought out, well, big percentage of Coors, right?
I believe so. I believe they're owned by Miller Coors.
Yeah, you know, so I mean they're. I can see now where they got the backing, because even a small place there on City Hall is like $20,000 a month on rent.
So. Oh, sure.
Yeah. So.
So then another question I have, and you know, I don't want this to sound morbid, but if you had the opportunity to choose your last meal and your last beer, what would they be?
Definitely an IPA, because that's what I like. And last meal, I don't know. Yeah, I can't even. I mean, I sell burgers here, but I don't really eat burgers. I'm more on a vegetarian side.
Well, that's kind of surprising.
Yeah, I'd have to sell something that goes well with the beer here.
Sure.
So,
well, and in that Discovery Channel video that you were on, that you sent me a copy of, it sounded like you're not afraid of spicy either, which...
No, I like spicy. That's why I grow my own habaneros and jalapenos here, and that's what I use actually for the food here.
And the Spanish who are not typically into spicy food, or you don't see a lot of spicy food in their cuisine, but they're... How are they responding to all that spiciness?
I've got a combination. I've got people that are diehard, but I get a lot of American students through here from the University of here. We got the Berkeley Music here also in Valencia. And there's a lot of American students. So, a lot. They're the ones that mainly take up the spicy stuff. But the Spanish, they're not.
No.
For them, pickled jalapenos, extremely spicy.
Well, and my experience is American males of college age are never one to turn down a challenge when their buddy offers up a beer if they bite into the ghost pepper.
Exactly. that is very true. So there's a lot of daring here after a few beers, and then the Jack Daniels starts hitting.
Oh boy. So last question for you, Mauricio, and this is more specific to the podcast, but this is where I think there's a lot of stories. I think there's more in the story of beer to tell. So my question for you is, why does good beer matter?
To me, because it's the best stuff out there. I'm a beer drinker, so I don't know. I could never turn down a good beer.
But does it? And granted, I'm a sucker for good wine, good beer, good cocktail, good food, good music. But why is that such a thing? Why? How does that affect us? In your perspective.
Right. I don't know. I mean, to me, it's the whole thing, like the microbrewing stuff. I mean, it gives a whole different look to what people have been used to as a beer. You know, here it's, like I told you before, it was just wine, but people are recognizing that a good beer can be made, you know, and it's not your typical lager, and, you know, but I don't know. I mean, to me, it's just... You know, good beer is just something I really enjoy, and it's a nice product. There's, you know, you've got so much variation in brewing a beer of styles and taste, and, you know, it's a very open, but, you know, and I like wine also, nice wine.
Yeah, I have recently discovered Spanish Garnacha, and that is currently my favorite wine to drink.
Oh, really? What's the name again?
The Spanish Garnacha.
Yeah.
The wine, well, I found a wine called the Cinco Garnachas. Apparently it's a blend of five different Garnache. That and the Sangre de Toro. I really enjoyed those.
Yeah.
I just love how that particular wine, granted this is a podcast and a story about beer, but you know, wine kind of goes along with this. I'm an equal opportunist, but the thing I love about those wines is that they're easy to drink just on a afternoon happy hour, pre tapas hour, but it's, they're not sweet. They're not sugar bombs, but they also pair wonderfully with a wide array of food. And for me, that's the important part.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's interesting. You said, you know, the wine. It's here at the Valencian Wine Festival. Remember years ago, it was just wine, and then a few years back, the first brewery, which is a friend of mine that actually went in there, was Artura de Huelo. And you know, now you go to the wine festival and it's almost half breweries and half wine, you know. It's, and everybody's in there that goes primarily for the wine, but it's, you know, it's become like a mix. Like everybody's in there and they're enjoying the wine and beer in this festival. And to me, it's like this last one was, it was interesting to see that it was, you know, finally in X amount of years, now it's like, you know, you're getting both percentages. You know, it's the Valencian wines only is the festival, and Valencian beers only. And it was interesting to see that, where, you know, there people are, it's, you know, side by side with wine drinking these beers. It was interesting.
Well, it's funny you say that, because my observation, I don't have any empirical studies to support this, but it seems to me that a lot of older generations either drink wine or drink beer to a greater percentage than the younger generations do. But you know, just here in Oregon, I see there are those people who, they want their good beer, they also want their good wine, they want their good whiskey, and there are even people in Portland making sake and doing kind of like craft sake.
Right.
There's Portland Sangria is making more sophisticated sangria that's not just the sugar fruited bomb that we all know and love from our college days and our travel days. But
but
I think everyone is just recognizes something quality and something enjoyable, and it doesn't have to be beer. It doesn't have to be wine. There's a wonderful world to explore out there, it seems.
Yeah, that's very true.
So, Mauricio, do you have anything that you'd like to add to this conversation that we haven't covered already?
No, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like you were asking me. It's become a big scene here. You know, and I think, you know, right now, to me, it's a big, you know, it's becoming a movement. But I think from here and 10 years, is going to be a whole different story, you know, on the whole microbrewing scene. I mean, just seeing how fast it's evolved in these years, you know, and how professional it's gotten, you know, from what I saw it at the beginning and to what it's now, you know, I've just seen the big change. I think from here, you know, it's kind of like what you were saying, it's a prime time kind of to get in. You know, and whoever's the people that are starting to get into it, it's, right now is the time, you know, and right now is when everybody, you know, people are looking for it. Customers are actually looking for it. They specifically come asking because, you know, they've had beers somewhere else or whatever, and they want to come and try it because they're actually going around and looking for the different style of beers that are being brewed. And that's, for to me, that's pretty exciting, you know. And I'm not a bar actually pushes the product. People know it because it's kind of word of mouth. People know the place, you know. It's not something that I'm advertising out there, but it's interesting. It's neat. I think it's an exciting time, you know. It's kind of like you were saying earlier, it's back in the, you know, mid 80s, early 90s is kind of where it's starting to kick into that.
Well, if people wanted to find out more about the Portland Ale House and Stone Castle Brewery, how can they find you online?
Right now, the only thing I have is really it's Facebook is what I'm on.
Okay, so they can find you Portland Ale House on Facebook.
Correct, and also the Stone Castle Brewing, they're tied together, but they're two different accounts. But
Understood.
And that's pretty much like the events and stuff like that. You know, it's when I have things going on, 4th of July and all the different stuff. But, and, you know, most people, that's how they come here. Like, if you're traveling, people use a lot. They use the TripAdvisor and stuff like that. But,
sure.
Yeah, I've never been, you know, it's pretty much when I first opened up, it was kind of a neighborhood little spot, you know, for just mainly just drinks. So it was, people would have dinner, and then this was where you'd come to have your drinks and spirits and stuff like that. And it's kind of evolved throughout the years is when I started turning it into a restaurant, and just kind of little by little it's been evolving. And as kind of pretty much as demands, you know, and as I learn what I'm doing at the same time. I never worked in a bar. I had no idea. I flipped homes for a living. It was buying, building, and selling, you know. So it's kind of, so this was all new to me, was coming into this whole sector and doing this. So I've just been learning, really, and I'm still learning pretty much.
Good Beer Matters is a show about great beer, great friends, and the experiences we create together. But it's also about better appreciation of the beer you enjoy. I believe better education leads to better enjoyment. So if you're a beer and food professional, or even a beer enthusiast, then please subscribe to Good Beer Matters and leave a rating on iTunes. After that, grab a beer, hang out with friends, and let the world open up. Thank you for listening. Salud.